You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi, this is Tanya Pinkins, and you're listening to my podcast, You Can't Say That, the podcast where you can, on the Broadway Podcast Network. My guest today, I met her because I was shadowing her as a director on an episode of Madam Secretary. She has done a phenomenal thing to me, and I want to ask her about it, in that she is a successful female director, television, film, across the world, and pretty any country there is. She's directed like 30 films. She's a writer. She's a producer. Most recently, she's represented with The Witcher and the new series. So let's welcome Charlotte Brandstrom.
Hi, Tanya. It's great to see you.
So what are you doing now? I looked online, but I saw that you're in New York shooting something. What?
Yeah, I'm in New York shooting a series for Apple called Ray James or Invasion. And it's about, I'm not even...
What are you allowed to say that you can't
probably
say?
Probably nothing.
Okay,
nothing.
NDAs, you can't tell us anything. By the time NDA. This comes out, it'll be on the air.
Exactly. But it's about an invasion, panic. I mean, sort of reminiscent of what's happening today.
Right, like what's happening right now.
Yeah, what's happening right now. And people's reaction when they're under invasion and relationships and how they unfold and how they change and how they evolve when you're in danger, when you're in war, when you're in different situations.
That's interesting. I'm reading a book right now called Bluebirds, which is by a Serbian woman talking about, you know, her years of traveling from country to country as a, quote, refugee, and the way people thought of her. Like when she got to her place in Britain, you know, they were like, thinking they were giving her a good life, and she was coming from a very middle class life, and this was like a shock to her to be living like a refugee because that was so different from the way she came. But you know, people thought they were giving her a better life suddenly. So it's a weird thing what people
And actually
assume.
We are shooting, I can say it now, it's not going to be on the air for a while.
Yeah, so this is not going to come on the air for about 4 months.
Okay, so we're actually shooting in big department stores next week. And we had transformed those department stores, I won't say which ones yet, but into refugee camps.
Oh, wow.
So actually it is about America, all of America becoming refugees.
Woo! So. Okay. Okay, I kind of can feel that. All right, now I know you're a mom. How have you been a director and a mom?
Well, you have to cope with being guilty or feeling guilty all the time. But otherwise, I think that it was much harder when my son was younger. Now he's 25 and now he's really proud of what everything I've done. So it was worth it. But it was very tough up to the moment when I found the perfect thing to do with him is that when I came home after shooting, we had Skype or FaceTime, I would turn that on and leave it on all evening. So he could go, he was at home, I was in my hotel room, but we were on all the time. So he didn't have, you know, kids don't like to have to be on the phone all the time.
Right.
So he knew I was there if he had a question about time, about the bash, about anything. So we were still connecting that way.
Wow, I love that idea.
And that was actually very helpful.
And did you have a partner in this relationship? Like, was
back
he,
then, yeah, I was with his father, but we were all different, living in different, I mean, I was obviously shooting all over the world. My son was in Paris because he was staying in Paris then. And my ex-husband was in LA. So we would be traveling back and forth between each other. I was working more in Paris. Obviously, I still lived in LA, but most of my work was in Paris back then.
Wow.
So, and my son would like coming to visit, and his father would come home if I was gone for a really long time. He actually took care of him.
Now, did you do AFI before you had your child or after?
I did AFI long before.
Long before. So yeah. Did you come out of AFI and get into directing? Because I was like looking at
the stats. I sort of didn't come out of AFI coming into directing. You were told that you're like a chosen one when you come out of AFI. My first job after AFI was actually cleaning motorhomes for the actors. And I knew everything about the motorhomes and trailers.
Oh, God.
So my first job was dumping the toilets and learning. I was in Death Valley sharing a hotel room with another PA, and we were PAs, and I was holding up traffic in the desert and taking care of cleaning up motorhomes and making sure the dogs had air conditioning when they were inside. The director's dog.
Very glamorous.
So that was very glamorous. And I really worked myself up from there. I started off like that. That led to an apprentice editing job. And then I became an assistant editor and editor. I worked in editing for several years. And that was amazing, actually. I think I learned the most about directing in the cutting room, probably. It was interesting to go to AFI. You learn about, it was a really good school. And after that, it was really learning as you work, right?
So what did you learn in the edit room about directing, editing, that changed your directing?
You learn first how to shoot economically. So you know which shots you need and which shots you don't need, which can help when you have a time pressure. Mm-hmm. And then it's actually the last rewrite of the film. You really see what works dramatically or not. So it's so interesting. You take a scene away and then you change the order of shots. You find the right rhythm in comedy and it becomes funny. While if the rhythm is off, you lose all the comic relief. And it's really, to me, I can't advise more for any director to come from editing.
Now, you know, the people who are listening cannot see you, but you're a really beautiful woman, blonde, blue-eyed, she's very fit. So, you know, we're in the Me Too generation. You must have some stories coming up. I'm sure you were offered many things for being a beautiful woman.
Yes, my worst job, yeah. No, but what I was offered, back then you would send around resumes, so you obviously didn't get a job because they look at you.
Right.
And I never
then they saw you and they were like,
I never really considered myself that beautiful anyway, I had my first story when I, one of my first job was actually a job for a network. And I'd forgotten the producer's name, but he would have me come in. I was obviously answering phones and taking care of his mail. And he would have me constantly come into his office to clean up like stuff on his desk and try to
bend
look at
over
you, and bend over and everything. And he would like spill coffee on his desk and showing it in front, instead of obviously wiping it up himself.
Right.
He was showing, he was pointing and saying, can you please, there's a drop of coffee there. Can you please clean up? I didn't last very long. I left, actually. And back then, I was married.
Uh-huh.
But that's nothing to do with it. But
yeah, you're feisty.
But I said, like, this is like just bullshit, total bullshit. So I never really felt pressured in anything, but I never gave in on anything either.
Yeah, I don't think strike me as a mark. You hold your own in the men's club on the set. You seem like you hold your own.
What I always tried, because obviously I started off at a time when it wasn't so easy for women. Why now it actually, as a female director, it's easier to get a job.
You think?
It's a little bit easier, I think, because some people want to hire women. I mean, when they do, like I know, for instance, for Amazon, they say they're trying this.
That's they say they're least. Trying.
Yeah, they say they're trying to have 50% of women and 50% men. They're trying. And I think it's getting a little bit easier. Also, I have much more experience today. So that's obviously also helpful. I'm not starting off today. But back then, as a woman, it wasn't simple. That's also why I went back to France to start directing. I felt it was easier to get going there after AFI and after I had work in the States. as a woman, you always feel as a woman that you need to pay your dues more than a man. I always feel like in order to feel confident in what I'm doing, I probably have about 3 times more film than any man that gets hired for the same position.
Like. Yeah.
I guess all this experience has helped. So I'm working a lot right now.
Right.
And I'm working on big shows. And I know a lot and I find it easier, much easier now. When I started off, what I try to do is not to think about the fact that they were hiring me because I was a woman or that I had a hard time getting that job because I was a woman.
Got it.
I just tried to just move forward and wanted to be considered as a director.
Now, aesthetically, you've been in lots of countries shooting. Is there a different aesthetic when you're shooting an American story versus you're shooting a story that's a European story?
No, I think the script drives everything.
Really? Obviously,
yeah, I really think so. I think that maybe, you know, Swedish scripts are very character-driven. They're very dark. They shot mostly in cold climates. And you have very little money. So you obviously have to shoot in a smart way. You can't do many takes. You can't do all the coverage you want. So my editing experience, it becomes very helpful there.
Okay.
When you're shooting a film in France, you have more of a crew, a bigger crew. You have actors that are, feel that they don't prepare as, they actually don't prepare as much as Swedish actor or as the American actors. I feel like here they come very well prepared.
Mm.
And they feel like they need to be more spontaneous. Doesn't mean that they're not good, but mm-hmm. it's just a different way of shooting.
Mm-hmm. That's their style. Like.
Yeah, it's a style. It's supposed to be more creative style.
Uh-huh.
But it's all different. You just have to come in as a director you have to adapt to whatever's happening around you. But I feel that my style, whether I'm shooting in France or in Sweden or in America, it remains very much the same.
And what is your style?
My style, first of all, I read the script. I feel that the performance is very important. I try always to pay attention to details, to the small story and the big story. I find what the most important for me to film when I'm directing a movie is actually the actor's moment of decision more than the action.
Mm.
What is happening before he's knocking at the door? What is happening before somebody comes in? And I think that that gives life and it adds something to everything you do.
Mm.
And you can help anybody's performance that way also, I think.
How?
But by helping them to feel real in a situation. If I'm filming you, Tonya, opening the door, I would say, why don't you just come out of the shower with a towel in your hand and you're actually drying your hair as you're opening the door? That way I feel like there's a life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you're just opening the door in a normal, you're just opening a door, right?
Right.
But you can make more out of it.
Right.
And
okay.
That's something I believe in very much.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Now, when I last saw you, we were in Budapest eating some delicious Italian food.
Well, I was doing The Witcher.
Every night
after
that. I went back to that restaurant every night.
Yeah.
You were shooting The Witcher.
Yeah.
You were coming in when they had just changed the style. So how do you come into a new show that changes the style and find a style?
Well, I had a wonderful crew, a wonderful DP that I work with, Gavin Struthers, a British DP, what actually. And we tried to tell the story. I mean, it's very hard. I work very much with instinct and what I feel in my stomach and with emotion. When I watch the monitor, I know if a scene is working or not.
Mm.
And most of all, I concentrate on the characters. And then with the help of the DP, we tried obviously to make it also as visually magical and spectacular as possible.
What can you do to make something visually magical and spectacular?
Try to shoot the scenes in backlit, so at the right time of the day, first of all. And then pay a lot of attention to location scouting, to find the right locations and fight for those so you find something that is visually interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And what's wonderful in The Witcher is that you don't need to stick to reality. You can actually, it's magic, it's fantasy. So you can actually you can create your own world. And it was wonderful to work on that series because every episode was sort of independent. They were all based on a short story. So you obviously, there was a red, I mean, you have to, there was a continuity with the characters, but each story was independent.
Mm.
They had their own location, they had their own style, they had their own visual style. So I hope I'm not talking too fast. Do you understand?
I understand you.
You understand me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But just to say a parenthesis, once I did an interview for Entertainment Tonight when I was at AFI, and I listened to that interview in the evening on TV, and I could not understand a word I said. So I'm just being...
No, I understand you. I love The Outsider. I just finished it, and I was looking, and I saw that you directed an episode of The Outsider.
Yeah, that was very interesting. I learned so much on that show.
Was that, when I saw you, you had just met with Justin Bateman. Was that what the project you were thinking about with him?
No, we had a Skype interview for actually Ozark.
Oh, got it.
And I didn't get Ozark, but I got The Outsider instead.
Mm-hmm. I like that show.
And I like The Outsider. Or
yeah,
Ozark?
I like
both, actually.
Yeah, I like them both too. Yeah.
Yeah, they're very good shows. He's very good. That was amazing to work for on because Justin just says, just do your directing work. Don't bother about doing too much coverage. We like no coverage or as little as coverage as possible. Just do it where it feels important to you. And he gives you a lot of freedom. And then I worked with a very interesting camera operator who was very inventive at all. And they had obviously developed a certain style before I arrived. They were shooting some scenes at 32 frames per second to add more tension to the scenes.
Mm.
They were using a diopter, so there was a very shallow depth of field. They had people walking in and out of focus.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something they liked. And within that, those parameters, I tried obviously to create my own style and do my own episode. But it was a very interesting collaboration with the camera operator because whenever I wanted to do something, he pushed whatever I wanted to do even further.
Mm.
And I got a lot of mileage out of that show because you feel like you continue learning constantly, even if you, we were saying 30, I've actually shot almost 50 TV movies by now.
Wow.
I'm up to over 50, I think.
Okay.
And you continue learning constantly when you work with intelligent men and smart people.
Mm-hmm.
And who also know something about filmmaking, obviously.
Tell people what coverage is because,
coverage is, I mean, obviously we shoot a scene. Coverage is you have a scene and it's the close-ups you need.
Mm-hmm.
It's the different angles you need in order to tell the scene.
Now, you were saying you like decisions. If they're not doing coverage, how are you seeing the decision if you're not doing a lot of coverage?
Yeah, I have to have coverage. I mean, you have to have coverage for a certain important moment, but you can also decide where you don't need it.
Okay.
Look at the film like Sam Mendes, 1917.
Mm-hmm.
He has very little coverage in that film. He has no coverage. And it still is very strong dramatically because he rehearsed it, obviously, like theater.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have seen some of his plays, even together,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
But I think it's amazing. And there he did the coverage with the camera. So people,
so like Kurosawa, where people are moving
into camera,
they're moving in, the camera's moving and they're moving into mediums and closes and out and stuff that.
Like somebody else who did that very well was Bergman. Mm-hmm. When he did the Silence, for instance, there is a story of a little boy in the train. He moves in and out of frame and he moves closer to camera when he's supposed to be tighter, when it's supposed to be dramatically intense. Because obviously you always say, and it's a truth that you tighter a shot, the more a close up, the stronger the intent, the stronger the dramatic. The stronger it is dramatically.
Right. Right. Well, you know, after my 3 years of shadowing, you were maybe, let me see, in my shadowing, I don't know, you weren't the last person I shadowed. You were the next to the last person
I
shadowed.
Who did you shadow after me?
Michael Satrazimus, who's the producing director of, he came from Walking Dead, and he's the producing director on Fear of the Walking Dead. And at the end of those 3 years, I was like, it doesn't seem like I'm going to get hired. So I hired myself and directed my first feature film, which was kind of fantastic. I kind of loved it. I was like, okay, yeah, I could do this TV thing.
Yeah. Of course you can.
Yeah.
I know you can.
Yeah, I felt great about it. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to have to keep giving myself these jobs because the stats on women are just not very good.
They're getting better, though. I mean,
they are getting better, but they were so bad.
It's true. They were so bad because when you consider the amount of women you see in film school, you sort of wonder what happened to them afterwards.
Right.
Obviously, having kids, it's not easy, so you have to deal with that, but that's not the only reason.
Right, that's not the reason. And also, in the Silence, there were a lot of women in film.
In the
Silence, they were writers, they were directors, they were doing everything. And then suddenly,
what happened?
The paychecks got really good, and they were like, "These paychecks should go to men."
Yeah. No, it's true.
Right.
And it's really, I mean, and I think women, it's so important today that women are supportive of each other and help each other because there is still long way to go, I think.
Yeah.
But I feel that people are wanting to be a higher. I mean, it's rare that shows only have men.
Right.
But there are always more men than women. True.
Right.
But there are a few shows still that have only male directors.
Do you get to watch any shows so that you know, that's a show I want to work for, and you can tell your representatives, or are you just so busy that it's like someone has to call you and say, this is what we want you for, and then you got to catch up on that to know the style of the show?
No, I mean, I used to just take what was coming at some point. Now I watch shows, but also it's hard to watch shows and say that's what I want to do because I'm trying to do a lot of first seasons and new shows now.
Mm.
So it is to look out for what's going to happen, to know what's going to happen.
Well, how do you do that?
Well, by speaking to representatives, you see in the press, by you know what's in development.
So you want to be in first season?
It's very interesting to be in first season because that's when you set the style. Even if you don't get to do the pilot necessarily, if you do a few episodes, if you're in the first season, everybody's still searching what the show is supposed to look like. So there is a lot of room still to be creative.
Have you done a pilot?
No, I was just going to get to that.
Okay.
At this point, I feel like, I'm doing this show. After that, I'm doing another one for which I really signed an NDA that I can't talk about.
Got it. But you get to set the style. You're going to get to do the pilot of that.
No, I'm not going to do the pilot of that. But after that, I really want to get into pilots. There's absolutely no reason because a lot of men, actually, with much less experience than me are doing a lot of pilots. And I think I'm more than ready to do more pilots.
Okay.
In the States, I've done a lot of pilots in Europe.
Okay, but so
I've done
what's
pilots
the difference?
In France.
I mean, isn't that the same job?
It's the same job. You just need to get it here because here the budgets are bigger. It's always the same thing. But now I think there are women who are getting into big budget features, big budget TV. Great limited series. My goal is to get onto a limited series when I do every episode.
You want to do everything.
Yeah,
got
I've
it.
Done it twice in Europe.
Okay.
I've done 8 episodes twice on the first season.
So, but you just said there's no difference, but here we already got a difference. In Europe, they give you the whole series. Yeah. Here, that's not happening. That's a big difference.
It happens a bit, I think, to some people. But, it happened to Steven Soderbergh when he did The Nick. It's happened to David Fincher. It's happened to a few
guys,
male feature directors. And it hasn't happened to some women also, I think so.
I can't think of Reed Moreno didn't even direct all of the Handmaid's Tale. No, I don't think
she did do the pilot though.
She didn't do the pilot?
She didn't do the pilot. I think she did the pilot.
She created it, but she didn't direct the whole season, the whole first season.
But I still feel like more and more women are creating pilots, are creating series, and it's happening. Right now, I couldn't even take a pilot because I don't have time. I have committed myself.
Through the whole year?
Through the whole year, yes. Up to Christmas.
And how many weeks do you have? This is on the series you're here in New York with.
New York can be, I was supposed to, it's shooting a bit longer because we have the problem, also a lot of schedule changes because of the virus.
Right.
So we were supposed to shoot in Japan and can't go there.
Oh.
No. So I think we could go there, but I mean.
Are you worried about the virus?
I'm not really worried about it.
Because?
Because I feel I'm lucky enough to be in a good health. And if I got it, it would be like I would have the flu.
And you would recover?
I would recover. I think that in France, 98% of the people who had it had recovered.
That's the stats on recovery have
been
quite
fantastic. It is like influenza. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is very dangerous for people in their 80s. So I think the most important today would be to really protect the old people.
And there's a lot of old white guys on film sets.
But you can't like... Well, let's
wipe out a whole generation and make room for a lot of people.
We could.
Yeah, I said it. I did say that. Okay, so you can't go to Japan.
So England has replaced Japan right now.
You're going to turn England into Japan?
We're not turning into Japan, but we are finding sets. We have to shoot. We have to get some establishings from Japan. We have to shoot our scenes somewhere else.
So tell me this difference for you as an artist between, you know, you're shooting your European low budget and you got your American high budget. Give me an example of what's going to make the difference. I mean, I think sometimes when you don't have a budget, you got to be really creative about it.
That was part one of my conversation with writer, producer, director Charlotte Brandstrom.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.